Hi, I'm Dave Barnes.
And I'm John McLaughlin.
And welcome to Dadville.
Dadville is a podcast where we talk about life, love, and the pursuit of awesome dadding.
It's funny thoughts and deep talks.
So please, enjoy your time here in Dadville and enjoy this episode with...
Elliot Cherry. This week, everybody, we have...
The one.
One of our dear, dear friends with us. Who is Mr. Elliot Cherry. And Elliot is pastor here at Midtown, one of the Midtown branches.
We call them churches, but yeah.
I thought you called them franchises.
Hey, it's actually more biblical to call them branches, because guess what we are? We're the vine.
Okay? And see, no, he's the vine.
That's what I said. Yeah. That's a pastoral test. There's going to be more of those.
That's John 15:5 right there.
Dave, look at this guy.
Look at that. Dave, I would like for you to tell the audience where my church is in relationship to your house.
Okay. Spiritually,
and then tell them where your church is.
Yeah, then
spiritually miles away from my house. Physically, very close. Arguably, we may touch properties. Elliot pastors here in Nashville. That the church that our John McLaughlin attends.
Elliot is my pastor.
Honored.
He is your pastor.
Honored.
And we're going to have a little section that we call Air John Sins. That's coming in. Just to give you a heads up, that's going to be in about 10 minutes.
It's great.
Okay.
And it's a short list.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But heavy.
It's pride.
Heavy.
Period.
Heavy.
Pride.
Pride. Yeah.
So we don't need 10 minutes to say pride.
Yeah. So we are thrilled that you're on.
Very honored to be here. Does the audience need to know that this was kind of a pity ask? Like, we were having a tough time filling the slot.
February is a slow month.
Yeah.
In the everybody that knows the podcasting space knows slow February.
Slow February.
It's so it's
gotta get the filler.
Yeah,
it's like ESPN in August.
Yeah,
like you know. What
Guys, like you're just scrolling.
Yeah.
You're like, why am I watching bowling and so invested? Like, I don't care about this guy's plight. He has a daughter, for Pete's sake, and he's trying to get his son through high school. Like, bowl of 300.
Trying to get his son through high school.
Yeah, that's where that guy's living, man.
In Tampa. Elliot, for those who have been listening intently, for the super fans.
Yes.
Elliot has been referred to.
Numerous times,
but never his last name.
Never his last name. Did you just say it? Did you say it a minute ago? So it's not.
And I won't. So you can leave your pride at the doorstep.
Okay, there we go. I did. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, we've referenced you a lot.
Thank you.
So it really does feel like it's finally time you're on. One of the things, we're just going to come in hot.
Let's do it.
We were talking about this right before we started, and that's why I eventually started recording. If you could repeat your social security number just for everybody real quick at the top. Being a pastor, I have a very vested interest in this conversation.
Yep.
But one of the things that I thought would be really interesting about having you on is that, you know, you are a preacher, you're a pastor, and you are, you know, you're a younger pastor. How old are you?
36.
36. So, you know, but have been doing it full time for how long?
Yeah, this is my 8th year being the lead pastor.
Yeah, so you started really young. That's pretty amazing to think, because, you know, most guys are kind of not where you are now, but mid-30s, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think my dad had his first full-time, or had his first head pastor gig at 40, 39.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
That's more normal.
Something like that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's the normal
right?
route?
Gosh.
Is it like youth pastor?
No,
you
got to
do your time
wrong.
With a junior high?
Yeah. Yeah, you hate.
No, 32. I lied.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm way off.
Sorry, Dad. He was.
Yeah,
Dave
so
remembers.
Mad right
yeah,
he
Dave remembers.
This. He's over this.
Well, when you're a kid, your parents are immediately 40.
Well, honestly,
it's true. It's true.
It's
true.
It's like, wait a second.
But you hate to say it, but a lot of times the first job people get is in youth ministry, and I did youth ministry for a while. But people end up viewing youth ministry just as like a stepping stone, and the people who make the best youth pastors. Don't do that.
Shout out to Phil Roach.
Phil Roach. Yeah, that's right. There we go. And the ones you can name that have been doing it for a long time, they're the best ones.
Yeah.
Because they're not doing it just to move up. And so the assistant pastor in our church, Daryl, he was youth pastor for 15 or 20 years before.
Oh, wow.
So it's like those kinds are like.
Well, they were in it. They weren't looking at the horizon
right.
for the thing.
But normally, you go youth and then work your way up.
It's
interesting
that would be a stepping stone. I can totally see why that would be the case, but I could imagine being a youth pastor and then being a lead pastor or senior pastor, however you want to say it. That's completely different jobs.
It's true.
A lot less twisters involved with the senior pastor.
And Twizzlers.
Yeah. We still do lock-ins in the adult ministry, but yeah.
Tell me more about those.
Yeah, yeah. I can't.
They're
talk,
not like legal, though.
They're not on the books.
Yeah.
No, so this is something that I'm really curious, and I think people listening would probably, I think it's good to hear. So as a pastor, and again, I have such a vested interest from a dad who was one, and so I've sort of sat, you know, front row and watched a lot of this.
Did you literally have to, like, did family sit on the front row in the church you grew up in?
No, okay. No. Although, no, we didn't. Yeah. We didn't. We never did, actually. Like, yeah. I don't know that ever in my life I sat on the front row. What do you think are some of the really hard things? And you're interesting. You know, I think what makes yours even more intriguing is that you're 36 and, you know, you just had your fifth kid. So that's two really interesting things to add to that.
Yeah.
You know, that you're young.
Yeah.
So you're not someone that's like, you know, on the other side of that, right?
Yeah.
So, and I say, and what I'm saying by young is, your plight, I think, is very similar to a lot of listeners, and that they're like, oh, this, like, we're on the younger side of parenting.
Totally.
We're on the younger side of community and, you know, being involved in the city, and we're still vibrant and we're doing things. We're out mixing and moving and shaking and stuff. So I think when you think about being a pastor, when you're leading a church like this, what are the things that are just hard about it? Like, especially with where you are.
Man.
Right?
It's a great question. Yeah, we did just have our fifth kid. Who's had the most kids of all the Dadville guests? Do I get that medal?
One of the Hanson brothers.
Oh, the Hansons have like 13 each or something. So you're not going to catch them. Well, you may.
A lot of
them
bopping.
Keep trying. Lot of, yeah. Well, you said it, not me.
Yeah.
We know what that song is about now. Yeah. Keep going.
That's great.
I think that it is an interesting seat to be in. Because even for me, growing up, I grew up in a ministry house as well. When you see the pastor, you think like they're on the other side of like, not, yes, they have it all together. You can certainly think about the pastor, but also like they've lived through kind of a season, the season that I'm now in.
Right,
like, I never imagined I would be a pastor of a church that is growing and has all the demands of this role and have, you know, a life at home that I love, but is also a lot. And so, you know, and I've shared this with John and Amy a lot. We're dear friends with them, and you know, they go to their neighborhood church, so to speak.
Sorry, we're going
to
edit that.
But it's a hard thing to know that the vocation that the Lord has called me to will have an effect on my family.
And wow.
So and Amy's a pastor's kid as well, and so it just, the fear that I have, and maybe the taunt that I have to deal with the most is, Lord's called me to this. I believe in it. But what effect is this having on my children? The demands of the job, the stress of the job, but also just like, it's hard to untangle but dad is the guy that tells everybody about Jesus. Dad's the guy that everybody comes to when they need help, but he's just dad to me. But when I see him at church, he's more than that to everybody else. So it just is, how does that web get untangled? So that to me is that's the hardest part of my job, truly, is not even the demands that the job has, but is what effect is this having on my wife and kids?
Specific to their spiritual life.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, our oldest is 10. Our youngest is, you know, 8 weeks, but they don't have all of that going on. I'm imagining a lot more difficulty when they're teenagers, but in that realm of trying to disconnect that. But that's the burden I carry the most when it relates to my job and my two vocations as husband and father and pastor.
So when you say that, I mean, I don't want to take us off on a tangent too quickly, but like when you say that, I, of course, all of us as parents and believers feel that on some level. You feel it times 10 or times 7, maybe that's more biblical.
No, my gosh.
40.
Or 70 40. Times 7.
Yeah.
But I of course, you know, I want my girls to grow up and to, you know Jesus, love Jesus, all that kind of stuff. And I always think about, speaking of youth pastors, I always think about my time in youth group because it was a great time. It was awesome. And I look back and I am so grateful for it, so grateful for my youth pastors. But that is a season of sort of like black and white. The way that I viewed the world for a couple years
totally
is not how I view it now.
Right.
And I always think, is that I always want kind of my girls to go through sort of the track that I went, because that's what I know.
Right.
That's to use a maybe terrible metaphor. That's the devil I know.
You know. Right.
What I
mean? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, how do you view that? Right. Do you view the track that your kids are going to go on sort of in that way? Like there's gonna have to be some years where they view the world in a way that I sort of disagree with, but it's a means to.
But also maybe even like that season you're talking about for you, and I had this. I'd imagine you had this too, Dave. But that season of youth ministry, there were people that invested in me that weren't my parents that were amazing and like helped me to see Jesus, to fall in love with Jesus, to like learn how to be vulnerable, like to have friends, spiritual friendships, all that stuff. I'm hoping for the same thing for my kids, and it's growing at our own church where my kids really do enjoy coming to church, and it has nothing to do with me. Like because of children's ministry right now, my oldest is in a communicates class, and she's learning all kinds of deep spiritual things, and it has nothing, like I'm not the one teaching her these things. Someone else is. And so it's like, I'm hopeful for relationships that will come along that will, yes, certainly, like I'm gonna have to let them kind of have their weird, hard, emotional, adolescent, hormonal years. And there will be other people in the church community saying, and we're going to help you. This is the vows we take in infant baptism. That's what our church does. Mm-hmm. Is like, we are committing to helping you raise these children. And so like, yes, please community, we need you. Maybe I more than anybody need you to help raise these children.
Do you think some of the posture of that, because I think that's so healthy, and I think it gets us away from what we were talking about before we started recording, which is that sort of, you are like Elliot Cherry is the guy.
Mm-hmm.
All things run through and are approved. And
that's how my home runs.
Well, okay. I love that. Let's talk. Actually, let's pivot for a second.
It does.
Do you think that our generation of church is responding, is setting itself up and moving and functioning in a way that's a little bit of a response to what maybe didn't work for a while?
Yes.
Do you see that?
Almost like implicitly. Like it's not like everybody, there was like a group that got together and said, let's do it this way. It's like, we just kind of have seen how that doesn't end well.
Huh.
Let's do it. Yeah. And I,
but define what you're saying a little bit more.
So like what I love that you just said, as you were talking about that, is that you have nothing to do with what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of pastors would say, oh yeah, for sure. But I think a lot of pastors also would say, but ultimately I do know what's
right. Right.
Or I can step in and kind of, or I'm going to teach a certain part of that, which, there's not anything inherently wrong with that. But I do think what I see so much nowadays is like shared pastoring where you have,
it's what Midtown does.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you guys are at your different branches at your different churches, but there's a real sense of interconnectedness, accountability, shared responsibility, maybe as much as anything.
Yeah. We say at Midtown often that the most dangerous person at a church is the senior pastor.
Yeah.
In the sense that, like you said, not just everything has to run through him. He's the CEO at the top that is untouchable. That's dangerous, but also like it's the easiest for him to hide. It's the easiest for him to not be known truly. It's the easiest for him, all that stuff. And so there is a current generation that says like, we want our pastors to have that. And we believe that about our pastors too. So the church can actually love each other and be a family instead of it all having to run through,
Well, and forgive me, here we go. Buckle up, boys, because here comes a TED Talk. But like, I think I feel so strongly about this as a preacher's son.
Yeah.
And again, watching in some ways that my dad had to deal with, and I think on his bad days, struggled through, because it feels great, right?
Yeah.
When everybody's kind of like, dude, you're the man. But this thing that we naturally do as humans that we can't get away from, because we're something's got to be God. Something's got to be the idol. That's the way we're made. Like God made us to worship something. And hopefully it's him, but a lot of times it's not, And so what we do is we look to these, we just can't get away. Look at what happens in the Old Testament when, Israel comes to the Samuel and goes like, hey, we want a king. And he's like, so I've got it straight from the top. This is a bad idea. And they're like, we don't care. We want a king because we do want kings. We want somebody we can look to. Life has to be in this sort of like, hierarchical thing. We need people that we look to and go, you tell us what to do.
Yeah.
So, because somebody's got to know what's going on, and that's you, right? And so I think we're never away from that as a society. Like, as much as we're like, we don't want people, we do want people in charge. Right, right. We do. Yeah. And so I think that the tricky part of a church that happens is, without even knowing that we're doing it, and this is where I have so much empathy for you and my friends who are pastors and Chad and whoever, is going, you can't help. You can do everything right. You can have a million pastors pastoring with you. You right. can have a session that knows you well, right. like elders that know you well, yep. deacons that know you well. Still, those people coming to that church every Sunday and Wednesday night are going to be like, this is my guy. Like, yeah. And even and in their interactions, what you have to fight, which has got to be so hard every day, is going, hey, I'm a human. Hey, I'm a human. Hey, I'm a human. I'm a human. I'm a human. I have struggles. I have things I really have a hard time with. Because what I don't want to hear in my sin right. is like, don't do that.
Yeah, yeah.
I need you to be mm-hmm. a king.
And you know? I think, yes, 100%. We have a little small chapel where we meet. Our sanctuary is a 100-year-old building. It's a really cool space in our neighborhood, in your neighborhood, Dave, actually.
I'm sorry, keep going.
But we made an announcement a few weeks ago because we're just kind of out of space and needing to figure out some space issues. Anyway, I basically made the ask because of our other Midtown congregations and other great churches in this city. I mean, like Covenant, and there's other great places for people to go hear the gospel and be in community. I said to the people at the beginning of the service, like, hey, glad that you're here. It's a little crowded in here. We would just ask in the coming weeks, would you guys pray about if you drive past another healthy church, would you pray about going there? Again, not that we don't want you here, not that you're not welcome here, but like, would y'all, and literally someone in the offering box in the back put a note that literally said, and I don't know who it was because it wasn't signed, could have been a joke. It wasn't written like a joke, but it literally said like, we come to this church because you're the preacher. We're not going anywhere else. And it was like, that's what you're saying. It's like, that's actually what, like, you're actually, if that's you, please.
I actually wrote, we're coming because you're the pastor. I didn't say preacher.
Just FYI.
But
just
go ahead.
It was in woman crayon. Handwriting. Yeah, it was in crayon.
He did it with but left hand.
It worked with what I had.
Yeah.
But what you just said is like, it doesn't matter how much we would try to promote that yeah. ethos and that culture. People are going to want it. What's yeah. challenging about that reality, though, is, and actually what's really healthy and why I'm very thankful for my home life, as hard as it can be, and being a dad, is like, you're the guy, you're the king, you have all the right answers, you have your life together, and people want to view you that way because Israel wants a king sort yeah. of mentality is, that's not true when I go home, mm-hmm. which is actually like, you get why like pastors are workaholics, and like, cause it's way easier to stay at the office when everybody believes that about you than right. to go home. You know what I'm saying?
Let me just divert for 1 second. That's just, I don't only know men.
Yeah.
Right. Like, cause I'm mm-hmm. one.
Your wife told me that. Yeah.
Well, touche. I think this is a bigger discussion just for any man listening to this. One of my favorite discussions to have with my friends is exactly what you're saying. Like, we strap this nobility to hardworking people, and like, part of me wants to put a lie detector test on every man and go, tell me how many hours a week you need to work, and if this thing beeps, you get shocked.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, like every day, yeah, like 4 hours. You'd be like, right. okay. And yet we stay, and I do this.
Totally.
I stay back here in the studio because mm-hmm. like, I control the space. When I walk in that house, I control zero. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, your point, I think it's obviously a bigger thing, but I can imagine again for you where it's such a succinct, clear, the hierarchy is set yes. up,
yeah.
like, you know,
dude.
And then you walk in and all of those things are immediately stripped. Like, you know, the yeah. the crown goes, the scepter goes, you know, and it's like, you know, daddy, put on this cheerleader outfit and play with me. And you're dude. Like, wow, this has changed.
I was not doing this an hour ago.
That's right. <Yeah. laughs>
No, I think it's really true. And I think that's actually the Lord's mercy, is like, this is your primary call. Your primary call is at home to your wife and to your children. And the way that they view you is the proper way for you to view right. you. Like,
wow.
this is, you know what I mean? Like,
wow.
So people can put, you know, John can put letters in the offering box that say you're the man, but like to see yourself rightly, you know, that's what James talks about, is like, the fool is the one who looks in the mirror and then immediately walks away and forgets what he looks like. And so it's like, when you're home, the mirror is like, hey, this is who you are. This is mm-hmm. this is your job to serve here, to love here, to protect here, to guide here, to shepherd here. And this is how they view you. Don't forget what you look like.
What are the ways that you, because you have a good handle on that right now.
I've mastered it.
Yeah, you've mastered it.
Love that.
And I mean, I don't know if we have talked about this in the past. I have thought about this many times. Anytime I see some sort of like prominent, you know, celebrity pastor fall, I always think of you because you're my pastor. And, you know, the like you just said, like the room is full. Yeah. It's you have a talent for communication, for speaking, for, you know. And
easy on the eyes.
Easy on the eyes, obviously. You know, there are a lot of hearing impaired people that come to our church.
You got a great face for preaching. I will say that.
I got a great face for podcasts. Yeah.
But you've got a handle on it now. Like, yeah. This is something that I think we all think about. Like, Dave, you alluded to it. Like, I want to keep a hold of my headspace right now because you look across the aisle at different people, and I'm like, well, at some point, this guy over here, it got out of hand, and that could happen to me today. What are the ways that you keep that in
check? That's really good.
Because you got a target on you.
Mm-hmm.
Different, I think, than we do, Dave and I.
Yeah, that's good. I think that what you just said about like it could happen today, I think even that mentality is part of the defense in the sense of if I know myself, I'm like some of the Midtown pastors say, all of us are two decisions away from blowing our life up.
Yeah.
And it's that literally like two, it's not 100 decisions. I'm two decisions away. And that can be, that's not even like only directed at one kind of sin. I mean, there's lots of ways to blow your life up. And so, but I think believing, I really am two decisions away, which is like, I'm on my guard against what would that first decision be? Mm. But I think, you know, David talks about in Psalm 51, after his fall with Bathsheba and his Psalm of Confession, he says, in his repentance and in his restoration, my sin is ever before my eyes. That can be a shame-filled thing, like just beating yourself up. That can also be a really healthy thing. Like, I know my capacity. I know what I am capable of doing. Back in the garden, Adam and Eve, like, I know I'm a natural hider. I know I'm a natural, like, avoider. I know that you know, Adam, the silence of Adam, y'all have had Al Andrews on, like that. I know I'm prone to not want to deal with things. And so if I believe that my sin is ever before my eyes, then I actually, that's one of the defenses against it. And so I need people, whether that's, you know, congregants or other pastors or just friends that don't go to your church, that you would say, hey, you're always allowed to ask me about any part of my life.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the conversation, you're allowed to ask me if I lied to you. You know, like you can always see my text messages. You can always like you're allowed to do this. And so I don't feel like when I'm with friends like y'all truly and other good friends that I don't have to pretend to be something. Yeah, I had a hard week. Yeah. I didn't really want to like deal with this hard thing at home. Yeah. I'm afraid. Yeah. Whatever. If those spaces aren't there, which like you were talking about, you're, dad's generation of pastors, that wasn't normal for so long.
It wasn't expected of them, that level of transparency.
Yes. Yeah. And so I think that, now I don't think I should confess my deepest, darkest sins to the congregation, but I need to have a place to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And if that's not there, then I'm probably not two decisions away. I'm probably one decision away.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, I think the thing that's so genius about the way that God made all that is that when you get knocked down, there's nobody there but God left standing.
Totally.
So as a congregation, we just have to go like, oh, yeah, I guess God's
it
the
was,
guy.
Yeah, yeah. You he's know, the king
he's
of
the
Israel.
King. Yeah, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So the you know,
do y'all, can I ask y'all a question? I know this is, y'all, I'm the podcast
I guest, try to but, tithe, but I do forget if that's where this is going. And I feel terrible about it. I mean,
you have to do it every year?
Yeah.
Year.
If you're doing a remodel, you don't have to
every
do it, right?
Year. Yeah. Not week, not month.
Just for the podcast listeners at home, walking to Dave's studio today, John lives right across the street. Both of them have construction projects going on at their
really
house.
Exciting.
Just wanted it to be evident that
ours is we're building a youth group room.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
We are too.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Seriously.
The girls
you are,
live.
You
yeah. Are it's literally a group of youth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But do y'all, because like you said, it's the same for men. What, you know, it's easier at work in a lot of ways. People view me a different way than they view me at home. But y'all are on the road so much. That's a different dynamic because I know you also, I've heard you, John, talk a lot about, I really love my family. I miss my girls.
I talk about that too.
I miss my, never heard Dave say anything close.
I'm talking about John's family. I love his family.
But like, I know you want to be home, but there also is like when y'all get to tour so much, there is a joy of like, I'm traveling, I'm seeing cities, I'm eating, I'm with my friends. You're almost at like summer camp. I know you're working really hard too, but does that make that reality even more challenging? Like the road is fun too. And I don't necessarily want to get off the road, or is it like, no, I'm exhausted. I can't wait to get back home, even though home has its a different set of challenges.
Like you're saying, like I've said to you, I love playing shows now more than ever.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I never want to go on the road.
Yeah, yeah.
And I hope that never changes. I hope both of those things are true all the time. Thursday morning, I have a flight to Denver, and I don't want to go. And for those of you listening,
in Denver.
People in Fort Collins in Denver.
Can't wait to
when
get
I get on those stages, I will love it. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, once I get through security at the airport, that's when it starts.
Yeah.
But until I get there, I don't want to go.
Yeah.
And I hope I hope that's always the case.
Yeah. What about you?
I mean, I agree with John. I feel the same way. I really enjoy playing music. I don't love everything on the road.
Yeah.
I don't love what comes out. But you're right. Like, you know, I do the most consistent thing that I do that looks like a tour is these Christmas shows that I do on the road.
Yeah.
And it's tricky because it's like, I think the easiest thing for me is, and you know, like you being an Enneagram 7, what is really easy for me to do is just to not think about the things that are hard. And so the good thing about that is I can be very present because I'm like, hey, I'm with my friends. We're having a blast. Because that crew, you know, I've got this band that I love these guys and girls, and we have so much fun. So the good news is it's like I think we're all pretty where we are.
Yeah.
The bad thing is I'm not home.
Right.
And so, you know, it's just easy to not talk to my wife for a day and kind of check in and kind of, oh, hey, so what are y'all? And then, oh, sorry, babe, I got to go. We got the show starting in 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a discipline that you have to have around it. But
y'all talk about like, the pastor being the guy, Israel wants a king. We want someone at the top. Y'all have a room full of people every night who are literally like there to watch you and there to like clap for you and believe that you are. Now maybe you're not the spiritual guy, but you're the guy for them that night. You know, they don't see your, maybe they don't even want to see like, hey, this guy's got major flaws or like he's a, or, you know, like you just have a room full of people every night in different cities that are going, this guy's king for me tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just disappoint them with
a second song.
You know, I don't know if you feel this way, Dave. I just don't feel like I've been doing this for a long time. So like the people who show up in Denver, they are they've been there since the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel like whatever like the honeymoon period was in terms of like the like, oh, there he is.
Uh-huh.
I just don't feel like that's the case.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I feel like they're there because these songs are really meaningful to them.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, I just don't feel like it's me.
Yeah.
Like some people go to shows because they want to see the person on stage. Right. They want to see the band.
Right.
And some people come for the music. And I feel like it's more so the latter in my case. Mm-hmm. And I also wanted to say, one huge thing for Amy and I is that for the first 6-7 years that I was on the road, back when we were on the road a lot,
mm-hmm.
it was before we had kids, and Amy was at every show.
She came with you. Yeah, that's right.
So she knows the road.
Mm-hmm.
So there isn't, like, the road to me doesn't feel like this sort of like escape in terms of like, this is my thing and I go do my thing.
Yeah.
She knows the road. Like, she knows the green room in Denver where I'm going to be. She can picture it.
Yeah,
she
spent
hours and hours.
And how they don't have a bathroom. And how they don't have a bathroom. A crime to humanity, though. I love that.
Little things like that,
that's
though.
For real? You weren't joking?
Yeah. No, I have to. And you're at a higher altitude, so you have to pee more. And you're drinking more to try to
stay ahead of the altitude.
So you're peeing twice as much in a place where you already pee twice as much.
Yes.
That's a fun game in that venue. I love that.
All those little things, literally.
So you're cutting through the ground. Hey, didn't you just pee? Shut up. Wait, where are you going? Bathroom again?
All those little things are things that make Amy and I feel connected when I'm on the road.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing. I don't know how you replicate that with everyone's job, but as much as you can, I think you should.
But she gets to see, she knows what world you're in when you're gone. It's not some other fantasy land.
Well, but you know, too, and what I was going to say, Elliot, which is kind of interesting that we both have, the three of us have careers that are both sort of in this same space, which is, I think, when you are in front of people, mm-hmm. I think you can lean two directions with that energy, right? You can double down and go, I am unique, and I want to be seen as unique. I want to feel special. I want to feel like why you're here is a legitimate claim, and I'm going to prove to you that it is in a really unhealthy way. And not only that, but I'm going to keep that train going as long as I can because, I mean, it just feels amazing. Like, it makes me unique, right?
Well, and you have to have a level of that. You have to figure out what the healthy level of that is to get yourself to get back on stage.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah. But then the other way is what you do and what I think John does really well and what I try to do, which is I really want you to enjoy this, but I have a discipline around being like you.
Yes.
So when I meet you after the show, when I interact with you online, yeah. My branding as right. a human, mm-hmm. as an artist is a rooted, grounded human.
Yes.
It's not check me out up in the clouds.
I'm untouchable.
And everything I do is trying to prove to you how different I am.
Right.
Everything I'm trying to do and John is trying to do works. Like all of our friends that we came up with, I think one of the reasons that we were able to do what we do in a way that didn't blow it up, because we can blow it up like you can, is we weren't hooking up with girls after shows.
Right.
We weren't spying the audience for the girl that you could flirt with afterwards or whatever, you know, boozing it up to death after, whatever that version of that thing is. Instead, I think, you know, I can speak for John because I've seen him do it. Mm-hmm. It's all just about meeting people and having them go, God, he's really
dude.
Cool.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because one, I think your ministry, I mean, if you call it our ministries, are twice as potent because we are normal.
Right.
Because then they go like, wow, that's, it flattens the room again, like you do. And then it's like, well, if John's that gifted, I guess we could just say God gave him a gift and not John's up there like.
Well, what's interesting is I've heard it said before. I actually think Daryl, my assistant pastor, said this a few months ago in a sermon, but something to the effect of like, your ministry, your pulpit is not a place for you to like work out your shame in the sense of like, if you don't deal with you with the Lord before you get up on stage,
wow,
you're going to make the room make you feel like I matter, I belong,
wow,
I have value. Like that has to be, I have to go into the pulpit from a place of like, I need to hear the words I'm about to say desperately.
Jeez.
Or like, I'll make how this goes and the applause I get, you know, the spiritual applause I get be what validates me. But if I'm already validated and I go to the pulpit, then like I can be free. I don't need the pressure. But it's really interesting because a great litmus test for how I'm doing in that for me, this is totally, y'all probably have versions of this in venues you play in, but our room is small enough at 12 South where I can see the whole room. So if someone gets up and leaves in the middle of a sermon, it's obvious. Every time someone leaves while I'm preaching, like the internal dialogue of, well, I guess I said,
I know this life.
I know, you know.
By the way, John and I can relate to this. Oh,
yeah. And so it's amazing to go, and I'll tell a funny story about it in a minute, but like that, how I react to that in real time lets me know, am I on this stage to get validation? Mm-hmm. Like in this moment, like, is this what I need, this thing? Do I need them to view me as the guy up there? Or am I actually, I'm okay. Because I'm already okay because I already have validation from Jesus. So I don't need y'all's. Our 5 o'clock service, a year or so ago, there was a couple that was coming every week. Every week they're coming to the 5 o'clock service, and every week they would get up about halfway through the sermon and leave. And this went on for like 2 or 3 months, and I was like, I mean, maybe they're just here for the music, and then like they just can't stomach the sermon, and it's like, oh, here we go, this guy again. And it was like bothering me every week. Well, then, and I don't know, the room's got too many people, and I don't know everybody, you know, I don't know faces and names and all that for everybody, but I get this wedding request. I sit down with the couple to do the wedding, and this couple walks in. It's the couple that leaves every week. And I'm like, guys, I just got to know. Like, please.
If it was a 4:30 service, would you stay for the whole
like,
thing?
It was like, and they were like, oh, we are like, we love this church. We're both night nurses, and we sleep all day. And then like, we come to the evening service, but our shift starts at 6 o'clock or whatever. So it's like, we got to go. And
oh,
like,
my gosh.
But what I was doing with that every week was, I was writing a narrative that was completely, I need you. If you leave, it's because you don't think I'm enough. And how can I be enough to make you not ever leave? Like one couple can derail the whole thing.
Whew, John, sorry I'm late.
You okay?
Yeah, did I miss anything? I've been training for a marathon.
Oh, wow, yeah. I mean, you only missed me starting an online business that's going to turn the artisanal pet toy world on its head, Dave.
Oh, I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't see that one coming.
No one did.
Tell me more about it.
Listen, I'm working on the name. Here's what I got so far.
Okay.
Whisker Wonders.
Okay.
Pet and Paw.
Okay.
Artipets.
Okay. Those are positively unique. Come on. It's a blessing. It's a burden. It's my life, John.
It sure is. But in order for this business to be successful, Dave, we not only need a great name, but we also need an easy way to sell our Pup Food Grip Chew Toy,
right?
Our Slobber Stopper,
yep.
Our Barkinator.
And don't forget
the Halloweeny.
Yeah. You hear that?
I did.
That's the sound of Shopify, John. Let's pause
for
a moment and talk about the commerce platform that's revolutionizing businesses around the world.
You know, Dave, I've been using Shopify for years, and it makes selling things online so easy, almost too easy.
Yeah.
I mean, Shopify covers every sales channel from an in-person point-of-sale system to an all-in-one e-commerce platform. It even lets you sell across social media marketplaces like TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram.
I love Facegram and Instabook, but Shopify is also packed with industry-leading tools to ignite your growth. It gives you complete control over your business and your brand without having to learn any new skills in design or code. And you know how much I hate learning.
Oh, yeah. Education is your enemy, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, what's incredible to me about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify is there to empower you with the confidence and control to revolutionize your business and take your business to the next level.
The next level is where we all want to be at, and Shopify can take you there. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dadville. All lowercase.
Go to shopify.com/dadville to take your business to the next level today.
Shopify.com/dadville. This is possibility powered by Shopify. So then literally he looks at me right in the eyes and he says, Dave, no, it's Tickle Me Elmo.
So just back to my original question, though.
Yeah.
You slept well last night?
Yeah, it was pretty good. I mean,
okay.
I was really derailed
there. Yeah. Listen, Dave, spring's upon us. You know, summer's almost here. You know, it's not getting dark at 5 p.m. anymore. I mean, how could it get any better?
Well, with the temps going up, John, keeping hydrated should be high on your priority list.
Yeah.
I know there are times where you run so fast, it's harder to do most things.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Totally. But don't worry. That's where today's sponsor, Liquid IV, comes in, Dave. Mm-hmm. As I journey down the path to becoming an elite runner, right? I'm just flying down the path.
So
I need just a bit more. And Liquid IV's Hydration Multiplier is the one product you're missing in your daily routine.
John, buckle up.
Okay.
Because I got some news for you. And just
That was my...
I didn't know if that was your back. In just one stick, you get 5 essential vitamins and 2 times faster hydration than water alone. Use it first thing in the morning, before a workout, when you feel run down, after a long night out, and on long flights.
That's right. You know what, Dave? I'm drinking it right now. You want to hear it?
Yeah. Here we go. Oh, wow.
Can you hear how hydrated I am?
Yes.
I mean, just the other day before I did my daily 10 miles, as I always do, I popped the stick in my water bottle, and I did the entire run in 7 minutes.
Whoa.
I don't know what the breakdown
is,
but
You ran 10 miles in 7 minutes.
7 minutes. And you can, too. That's entirely due to Liquid IV. Nothing else.
Okay, first, I'm not sure I believe you. And second, I don't think legally we can guarantee that.
Yeah, maybe you're right. You're right. Maybe it's just me, because after I drink Liquid IV, I feel like I could lift a small car above my head. You know?
Well, I think if it's a toy car, you can...
Like a really small...
You
like
could do that.
One of the girls. And
if you don't mind, if we could talk about me for a second. I love dropping Liquid IV's passion fruit in my water bottle right before a workout. 1 stick of Liquid IV in 16 ounces of water hydrates you 2 times faster and more efficiently than water alone.
That's crazy. Now listen, let me fill you in on Liquid IV's brag sheet since we're here at Dadville Corporate.
Yeah, please.
All right. It contains 5 essential vitamins. Mm-hmm. You got your B3, your B5, your B6, your B12, and your vitamin C. 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks. That's right. Made with premium ingredients, non-GMO, and free from gluten, dairy, and soy.
Get this. Liquid IV is on a mission to change the world. To date, Liquid IV has donated, this is crazy, over 36 million servings in 50-plus countries around the world.
That's right. So grab your Liquid IV in bulk nationwide at Costco, or you can get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use the code DADVILLE at checkout.
That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code DADVILLE at liquidiv.com. Well, you know, the funny thing is that I actually think is a little bit of the same for us and you, is that our best nights performing, your best moments in the pulpit, we're actually participating with the crowd. You are a congregant as much as you are a pastor, because what we are singing didn't come from us, and what you're preaching didn't come from you. And so some of my best nights, I'm enjoying the show as much as the people are, because it's like the band's great, or I'm just like, God, this is so fun. And so you feel this thing, like I think you would, to your point about preaching, is like, I need to hear this much. Like, I, on really good nights, I'm enjoying the show almost as a, you know, someone in the crowd as much as I am the guy on stage. But that's only when I remember what you've said. This is not coming from me. I'm not, you know, there's a quote in Big Magic. I can't remember the girl that wrote it, but where she says, it's a book, it's kind of about creativity, I think that's what it's called. But she said, one of the biggest problems that happened, I'm going to paraphrase this into oblivion, but she said, one of the biggest problems that happened in the creative space is when, like, because back in the old classical music days, there was this weird sort of understanding, this deistic thing where it was like, even the way they talked about it, like, I didn't write this, I was kind of given this. And so when a piece was celebrated, they really did say, like, what a divine moment. Yeah. Like, that's, and Beethoven, Bach, whoever would sort of sidestep and go, like, isn't that great? So, and they could go, yes. And it was like this collaborative feeling.
Yeah.
And, you know, she just makes this beautiful point, like, man, as that got chipped away and it turned into, like, John wrote this amazing piece of art and we celebrate John.
Yeah,
not only did it take away God's thing, but it dysfunctioned John and you know, to death, because now, John, you made that. And so not only if it's
I
great,
do have some songs that I'm pretty sure God would be like, that was all you wrote. Touché. Whoa.
But I think,
what was it? God,
you know,
by a different name?
What is it?
What's from the Indian album? God of a different name? God by a different name?
Praying to the wrong God.
Praying to the wrong God. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I'm writing that song today, God by a different name. So one of the things that, so one of the things I wanted to ask you, it's sort of in this space, is like, how do you deal with giftedness as a pastor?
Man.
Because you and I have talked some about.
We have, yeah.
You know, people come to you and go, write a book, or, you know, why don't you do this thing, or start a podcast, or whatever the millions of things that you could be.
Golly.
And again, sure. Those things are not bad. Yeah. I want to say that as clear as
especially
I can.
The Dadville podcast. Not,
this is
not bad.
This is. I don't want. I hate the word anointed. Can
talk
I say
about,
that with a
talking
pastor?
About the divine.
No, this but I mean, how do you deal with it? Because ours is different. This is where that space, to John's inference earlier, and biblically, those who teach are held to a different standard, right? So we can get away with things, quote unquote, that you can't, because it's not the same space. It's
when
not seen
that,
the same way.
The whatever, let's call it the Christian space. You're not allowed to acknowledge your talent.
Right. Man, that's good. So Joseph Patton, my worship leader, is one of my best friends. We were talking about this the other day. I mean, not exactly. You and I have talked about this before, Dave. We were talking about it a little bit differently, but he is very gifted. He's a songwriter here. He's a very gifted musician, but also awesome. Like thoughtful in the worship service crafting and all that. But he's really good at what he does, and we love working together. It's one of my favorite parts of the week. We get to plan the service every week and try to encourage one another, and man, you're really good at what you do, and back and forth and all that. But one of the litmus tests for me, and what you're talking about, Dave, of am I believing the hype, or am I like letting the hype go to my head sort of thing, is not even necessarily what I'm doing with it, but how many people in my world are asking and expecting me to be infinite, meaning they're asking me to like live without limits, and I'm letting them, and I'm doing
it.
You know, like they're expecting something from me in a capacity for me that only Jesus can do, because he's infinite, like, and I can't do. But they're asking that of me because, one, they believe I can fill that or satisfy that or help them, or two, I've let them believe that about me. Like, I kind of want you to think that about me, because I could solve your marriage, I could fix your problems, I can preach a better sermon, like I can do all that. And I had a moment a couple weeks ago, a couple was in for some counseling going through a really hard thing, and they kind of laid out a really hard situation that they're in. And I felt in me the insecurity of, I need to say something profound right now, and I got nothing.
Wow.
I would think that thought would occur to you 12 times a day.
It happens a lot. Yeah. Yeah, it happens a lot. It's happening right now.
Keep going. But, you can do this.
But I think that what I literally did, I was like, hey, guys, what y'all are in is really, really hard. And I don't necessarily, I literally said, I don't have any quick fix or like magic words to give you, but your anxiety, your fear, I can't hold, but I know the one who can. So I'm just going to read some Psalms. Like I spent 20 Jeez. Minutes just, we're just going to read some Psalms together because I was like, I don't have divine words for you, but he does. Mm. And so let's read them together. And that was my pastoral counseling for them was we're just going to read the Psalms together. And so I think but I'm feeling that moment of, I have to have something profound to say because that's what they expect of me. And that's what I expect of me.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's starting to dip in a subtle way to, I'm the guru here. And so you're right mm-hmm. to come to the guru because I kind of am the one. And I just think that, again, back to your point, John, a little bit ago about I'm always capable of blowing my life up is like, if that is not the mentality, then I will believe I'll take every book deal that gets offered. I'll take every speaking engagement. I'll do every podcast that I'm just getting blown up for, you know, all that kind of stuff mm-hmm. that is, I just think that there's a, if I want to believe the hype, there will be no resistance to that.
That's a great way to put that.
And
is there, I mean, I have so many questions I could ask you. Is there, so part of your job is speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And then a big chunk of your job is what you're describing now, like meeting with people, mm-hmm. counseling, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that you think about that you're like, if I could just somehow, I can't say this to everybody, but if I could like flip a switch
mm-hmm.
and everyone would know this about what it's like to be me, it would mm-hmm. make it easier.
Oh, man. That is a great question. I don't know if I would maybe want to think about that. If I've only got one shot, I want to think about that. It would be some version of what you're talking about, Dave, like how you, why y'all's fans really connect with y'all, like to really let people know, like, I really don't have all the answers. I really am just one of y'all. Like, we're all kind of stumbling into grace together. Like, when I first got this job at Midtown 12 South, I was 29 and in way over my head. And then we exploded in growth really quickly. And I was kind of drowning in the, like the fear of this is getting too big, too fast. I don't know what I'm doing. And I've got part of my own church hurt deals with a former boss that had a big crash and burn in that same scenario. Anyway, I remember I went to lunch with a pastor friend here in town and was kind of expressing the pressure of that and the fear of that. And he was like, dude, you just need to be a Christian, be a Christian that talks on Sundays about what it's like to be a Christian.
Jeez,
like
that is,
you know, and he said, you're not the chef. You didn't make the food. You're a caterer that literally is just like coming to serve the food to the people. But like, it's not even your food. Just like, just get the people the food. And that has like, so I wish people would just know like, hey, kind of, I do believe the Lord's given me a gift to do this. I don't believe that makes me kind of like you're talking about like in the old days with people's art, like, I'm just the one the Lord chose to give this gift to. I didn't do anything to make this gift spectacular. I'm just trying to give you digestible gospel steak mm-hmm. every week. And he's letting me serve it to you. He's not even like having me grill it. He's just like letting me come serve it to you. And so I'm a gifted caterer. Like I can bring the food from the kitchen to the front and he's let me do that. So maybe some version of that, like, hey, there really isn't any like magic sauce here. It just is, I get to do this and I love doing it. And he's given me a gift to do what he's called me to do. Much like y'all, like John, I've heard you say before, if you couldn't play piano, you really don't know what you would do professionally. Cause that's about like you're gifted, but that's the only one.
That's it.
And I feel that way. Like I hope this works out. Cause I'm good with people. I love, you know, I can laugh and be relational, but like when it comes to like vocational giftedness, I got one thing and
right.
I hope this works because I don't know what I'm going to do if this doesn't work sort of thing. I kind of, some version of that is what I would want to say to the people. Uh-huh. It's hard though when they see you up front and you're the guy, so you must have all the answers. You must have all the spiritual, you know, epiphanies. So when I come, this happens a lot at 12 South. And if you're a 12 South listener, I'm not angry at y'all for thinking this way, but people want pastoral care. They want to meet with me. And my assistant has to deal with this primarily, but I'm currently, as of today's recording, I'm currently booked out 2 months out. Like all my meeting time is booked out. So when someone comes up on a Sunday and says, can we meet? I'm like, we can meet. It's going to be almost 10 weeks before like I got time on the calendar. And they're like, oh, well, I kind of need help right now. I'm like, well, then yeah. This is why we have elders. This is why we have small group leaders. This is why we have other pastors. They don't want to meet with them.
Well,
though.
And two, don't you feel like, I think that's something that the congregation has to understand too, is like, because you're a really great communicator, mm-hmm. you may, and I'm not saying this about you, but I'm saying generally for pastors, that doesn't mean you're a great counselor.
100%.
Yeah. You know, 100%, and I think yeah. like some of the, it's always been amazing to me how some churches you'll go to, the session. Not yes. the pastor.
Yes. They're way better.
We'll come around the pastor and yeah. say, we're actually not going to let him counsel people because yeah. it's not his skill set.
Right.
We actually mm-hmm. have counselors on staff, or we have people on staff that are great with that. And we're protecting our pastor from something. He's just, that's not his.
My session believes that. And that, you know, I do pastoral counseling, but they don't believe I'm the only one that should be right. or that right. I'm even the best at it. One of my elders is an author, Jonathan Rogers. Small plug. He's wonderful. He's got a podcast called The Habit. It's
been
great.
Been on it.
You have been on it. That's right.
Love that.
He said a long time ago, and this the same truism for what you just said. But he said, you know, all the books that pastors are writing. He said a lot of great preachers don't make good writers. And he said a lot of writers wouldn't make good public speakers. But he said a lot of preachers that end up writing books aren't great writers. And I said, are you saying I'm not a good writer? And he said, I didn't say you're a great preacher.
oh my God.
So, but it's the same thing. It's like, just because you're good at this thing over here doesn't mean you're automatically going to be good
right.
at all the spiritual things. So. Right.
I have too many more questions. We got to get to dad stuff, but I have yeah. more stuff. Well,
you know, I'm a little offended though, because I've listened to the podcast enough to know that you do, you know, the rap sheet, the beginning of the intro.
The brag sheet.
The brag sheet. Yeah.
It was too much to talk about.
Yeah, it was too much.
Yeah, listen, we could regale people about your Florida upbringings. You know, we could talk about the amount of sermons you've preached, word counts. You know what I mean? Like,
sure. You don't want that.
We could,
that.
Do the amount of growth your church has seen. Sure, we can lean.
We could do the amount of basketball you play.
Oh, there we go. You know, could do the amount of offspring that I have.
Let's
hone in.
Look
on that.
At what yeah. you just did.
You have, I'll tell you my first question. You have 5 kids.
That's correct.
How are you? That's my first question.
Read the second question too.
Do you want to just take a nap right now and Dave and I can just talk about you? You have 5 kids.
I have 5 kids.
I do want to say your kids are awesome.
Thank you.
I love your kids.
Thank you. They love you. They love Mr. John. They fall asleep at night many nights to Mood as their lullabies. It's great.
What a just great bunch of songs that is.
Golly.
I thought it was every night.
Well, during we have to – they need some kind of –
it's fine.
They need some kind of. Just, they do need some you? Christian, you know, thought as they fall asleep.
All the mood songs are Christian songs.
That's true.
It's a Christian mood. It's I mean, that's what I already told you.
Yeah, it's true. It is an incredible. I've told John this before, but my kids love you. Thank you. My kids love your kids. We are in that stage. We got 5 kids, 10 and younger. I do have amazing kids, and I really mean that. I've got an amazing wife who is an amazing mom. And in the last decade, since we started having children, my wife, we've also had 3 miscarriages. So in the last decade, my wife has been pregnant 8 times. Mm. We calculated, you know, during this last pregnancy, in the last decade, it's something ridiculous. I don't remember the exact number. It was like, there's been like 6 months total that my wife has not either been pregnant or breastfeeding in the last decade.
Oh my God.
So when you talk about like, am I tired? We've got great kids. I don't know how we would do it if we didn't have great kids.
Yeah.
We are in that phase right now, though. My youngest, Joni, is 8 weeks old. 8 weeks old tomorrow. Wow. We're in that phase, though. I think I said this to you, John, or I said it to our small group. We're in that phase where if parents could remember this phase, they would never have another child.
Yeah.
Like, wow. This is the stretch where you're mm-hmm. like, what are we? Why? And then you get amnesia about this stage, and yep. we've forgotten about it 4 times, apparently. but it is like, oh, yeah, this is the stretch that, like, makes you not ever want to do this again.
Yeah.
Just the sleep. And we haven't had easy newborns. They're just, they cry, colicky. My wife is.
I wish you just stopped at cry. They yeah. cry. Oh, it's so annoying.
How did y'all cry? Get them to not cry.
Did y'all's cry?
It's like every single one.
Could you imagine how disturbed you would be if you had a kid and you're like rocking it and it's just staring
at you?
It never made a pee.
That'd actually be more, yeah. It's like a horror
I think my
movie.
Child like 17, that's just what you get. They're like, ah, another deal, man. Just like, yeah. If you give me a little food at some point today, that'd be awesome.
I did have a doctor say to me recently, my physical I had a couple weeks ago. He was asking me like, how's life with 5? And I was telling him it's hard. And he said, you know, Babies never died from crying. So you can just leave that baby if you need a break. Just leave it. Let it cry for a little bit. And it's not.
You're like, can I get that? Britta's going to need to see that in writing. It's
from really a medical cool. professional.
And could you, is there a notary? Letterhead, you is there a notary in the building? We could just solidify that.
We are well. We're in chaos. We love our kids. My wife talks about the difference between happy chaos and like chaotic chaos.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
The, like it's okay that like the house is chaotic when kids are playing all that, but sometimes it's just like the chaos that is like everybody's melting down. There's messes everywhere. There's dishes and that kind of we're it's a lot of that yeah. these days.
Really, really dumb question, but I want to ask it all the same. What is the difference between 5 and 3?
Great question, man. The old Jim Gaffigan bit that everybody yeah, knows. Yeah. You know, what's so like great. To have 5, imagine you're drowning and someone hands you a baby, is I don't think he was joking.
Yeah.
Like, that's actually what it feels like. Because 3 to 4, you feel like whatever semblance of control we thought we had.
Is yeah, okay.
Like, 4 is like, it's like, there is no rest for the weary. It's like, there is, we're losing all the time. There's someone crying, someone up in the middle of the night. Someone, like, 4 is like, oh, boy. And then you go, wait, there's no possible way we could, like, we're already drowning, and yeah. you want me to sustain another life. Like, yeah. I don't know. I did say a couple weeks ago to somebody, the hardest part about 5 kids is the other 4. Like, that, the, we're, that is, that, that, it's a lot. But again, like you said, John, we have amazing kids, and I, it's not like because our kids are so hard, it's just a lot of humans, a lot of chaos.
I mean, with 5 kids, there would be just some... so many logistical things. Like my yeah. brother has 5 kids mm-hmm. and I'm always thinking like you just took most of the vehicles that are made off the table for you.
Yeah.
You have to have like
an 8-seater,
one of these.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
100%. At least.
Yeah.
And like you go to like you could think of like the cheapest restaurant. It's still going to be like $100 or something.
We were at Taqueria last night. It's $115. Taqueria is the cheapest eat in the neighborhood, and I can't get out of there for less.
Is that something yeah. where when you are pregnant with your 5th, you go to your session and you're like, so I may have overstepped something here, guys.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the bylaws, and I realize that past 4 kids actually have to get approved.
Yeah, I actually get an indefinite raise every month. For, yeah. But the... my kids, Esther is 10, Winton is 8, Tilly is 4.5, Oakland is 2, and then Joni is 8 weeks. I got 4 girls and a boy. I will say, in the chaos, I love being a girl dad. I do think having 4 girls at this stage is different than if it was like
yeah.
5 boys or you know even 4 boys. Is like we have there is some a little bit more calm that comes with the girls, and just in terms of like energy level, bounce off the walls and stuff, but. This is a confession. This is like, hey, I hope, you know, people that go to 12 South won't leave the church if they hear this story. But
well, you actually need to free up some space.
We need to free up some space.
I was going
to
say,
so yeah,
let's
confess.
We'll lead with this, actually.
This is my life with 5 kids and the pain of it and the like, oh, man, I'm not going to be able to give every kid what they need. Yeah. I'm not going to be able to give any of them, but what they truly need, but like 5, the idea that I could be enough for everybody is yeah, like off the table. Yeah. So this past Friday, baby Joni slept through the night for the first time in 8 weeks on Thursday night.
Amazing.
It was great. It was kind of like, oh, have we like, okay, maybe we're entering the new phase.
Yeah.
Wife and I made my wife a drink. Kids go to bed, which still bedtime takes forever now. Yeah. So it's a little bit later, but like we haven't watched a show together in
yeah.
8 weeks. So
yeah.
let's watch a show. We watched the new Nate Bargatze sure. special on Amazon. It was great. And it was great. It was like 11 o'clock later than we would normally
go
to bed.
You are rolling some serious dice there.
Well, I know, but it was like, I want to like be with my wife. I want to like
started it at 11.
No. That's when it was done. We're going
okay.
to bed.
Okay.
Crazy night though. There were some gunshots in the neighborhood. And so there was a cop driving by in our, like shining a spotlight in people's yards, kind of freaked us out. Like what's going on? So night going to bed kind of starts a little chaotic, but we're hoping baby stays asleep. I'm like, maybe we can still get a good night's sleep. A little stressful, like cops in the neighborhood, gunshots, but we're okay. About an hour end of trying to go to bed, haven't fallen asleep yet. 4-year-old gets up, had a bad dream. Daddy, will you come lay with me? Go upstairs, lay with her. 30 minutes later, she comes back down. Another bad dream. Okay, now we're... Thought I was going to get a good night's sleep tonight. But
oh,
now,
just what you inferred with just those 2 words.
Yeah.
Now we're...
Yeah. Yeah. So then it's 1 a.m. I'm finally coming downstairs. I haven't slept at all. And I'm thinking, baby is sleeping. Maybe we can all get a night's sleep. Especially my wife. Really want her to get a good night's sleep. An hour later, toddler, 4-year-old comes down again. And Having a problem.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm like stomping out of my room, like, sweet girl, you, I forbid you to leave your room again. I pick her up and I go, sweetie, what is going on? Like, what? And she goes, daddy, I threw up. So I go, oh, sweetie. So she's been sick. That's why she keeps getting
out
of bed.
Where?
Yeah. So I said, where'd you throw up? She said, all down the hallway, walking down.
You're like, that's fine. Just
as long as it wasn't your bed, I just go get back.
Yeah, mommy will deal with it in the morning.
So I pick her up.
Did you tell one of your siblings? Are they awake? Could they? So
I pick her up as I'm walking up the stairs.
Oh, here we go.
Power goes out in the whole house. Drunk driver had hit a power line over in our part of the neighborhood.
What is and where do you like, live?
I know. I live a block from y'all. Y'all live
it's
on the,
another it, world on that side.
It
as
is.
Well.
It really is.
Listen, man.
But no, literally. So the power's off. I can't see the throw up now. Like, I.
Oh,
like, there's no lights. So I'm like,
oh my God.
I have to go wake my wife up and like, babe, I need you to come. She's like, I'm not touching throw up. I got a baby. I'm like, you're right. So I got to clean up all the throw up in the dark, get her on a pallet. I'm sleeping on a love seat in our playroom. I did not close my eyes to fall asleep until almost 5 a.m. that night.
Oh.
And so I'm like, that night, okay, but wait, it gets better. So that night's a night that is very bad. The next morning, it's 7 a.m. My precious son,
finishing your devotions.
Just finished my prayer time that morning. He comes in. He's like, oh, Dad, you slept in the playroom. I'm like, hey, good morning. I'm like, hey, buddy. I'm like, I'm just really, really tired. I'm like, can you go downstairs and like watch a show?
Do whatever you want.
He goes, Dad, it's my birthday.
Oh,
no.
My gosh.
I was like, buddy,
I know. Gotcha. Gotcha.
Sorry. So he goes downstairs.
You like throw up, don't you?
You know how you throw a party? Have you ever thrown up a party?
So he goes downstairs. Britta is, he goes to like wake mommy up. Wait, he just wants to see.
Hold on. I just want to sit in that moment for a second.
Dude, it was.
If anybody asks what it's like having five
that's
children,
what I'm saying.
I can't tell you how much that moment.
Yes. This is why I told the story.
Again, yes. I want to repaint it just because it makes it that much more potent. You are just finally getting to sleep. 2 hours in, you're like, oh, here we go. It's happening. He comes in.
Yes.
Dad. Oh, gosh, you slept. That's so sweet he acknowledged.
He's like, Dad,
slept in the-
yeah, yeah.
He's the sweetest.
He's the sweetest. John knows he is the most precious
like,
boy
look,
in the world.
Look, you get your rest, but you have also 15 more hours to wake up to my birthday. If you sleep 16, you'll wake up the day
he's
after
like, also,
my birthday.
Also, just let me remember. I don't know if you remember me. I'm one of your children.
No, that's it. He's like, oh, my dad. So he goes downstairs. Britta's also exhausted.
What are you doing?
I'm feeling like a terrible dad. I mean, just the worst. Like, I just didn't.
But are you also like, I'm going to go back to sleep.
But I'm also like, could you not tell anyone else that, like, could you just not wake the house up, please? But he goes,
your birthday present is arrested daddy at noon. I'll see you in 5 hours.
Two if it goes real well.
Britta does the same thing. He wakes mommy up. She's had, like,
cut to therapy.
It was
12 years later.
It was,
and he's crying now, in the room.
In my defense, which I have to validate myself here for. Bush
no, you. I don't think you need to. I think your pedigree up until this point is
We had done his birthday presents the night before. He'd had a birthday party a couple weeks ago. It's not like we didn't. It was like we had done his birthday. It was just like it was his actual birthday.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, he wanted his dad to say happy birthday, buddy. I'm so glad this is the day you were born.
Yeah.
I was taking him to Jenny's to do ice cream for breakfast on his birthday. It was awesome, but like. I didn't acknowledge. I didn't wish my son happy birthday. That's what it's like to have five kids.
Yeah.
So what did you do? What did you do about the throw up?
I got the flashlight on my phone out and just was wiping for 45 minutes.
That's
okay. Five kids.
This is Dadville. So we're gonna, I think at some point we have to acknowledge this thing. I think maybe I said this one of our previous episodes, but it's crazy. You know this two more times than I do with five. It's crazy. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful that in that moment. There was probably numerous moments you're not even thinking, I'm sitting here clean throw up. You're just like, okay. And maybe your mind want. That's the crazy
there
thing
is
about
no
parenting,
other option.
Isn't
this
it?
Is just what.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
And like realizing that, and man, shout out to the grandparents out there.
Right, right.
I think like as a parent, if there's anything that I've started to understand is how thankless a job it is being
man.
A parent and how we are serving all three of us all day. Not all day, they're in school, but you know, on weekends or something, you know, you're serving most of your life these little kids who are wildly unthankful for it and, totally. And not even being mean about it.
Right.
Like, I'm not saying they're being jerks.
They're like, this is, and the sky's blue.
Yeah, that's right.
Of course,
like,
cleaning up my throat.
But you know, it's just weird when I say all that to say this. to your point about clean and throw up, throw up squared.
That's right.
Send us your next vomit pictures, you know. It's like Hot or Not. You rate it. That's got five pukes. Two pukes. But like, you know, I just had a moment the other day where something like that had happened. And I just, this kind of lucidity is very rare for me. I was so in the moment that I literally stopped and I was like, I do this all the time. Annie does this all the time. Isn't it weird that I'm just in, by God's grace, I'm so used to it that I don't, every time you sit to clean vomit, son of a
kid. Yeah, all day. I can't believe I have to do
You're
this.
You're just like, here we go.
This is what I, this
Isn't
is what
that
I,
crazy?
And like, you've had to write that check so many times that it still costs you something, but you don't really think, it's like, it's like, this is what I have to pay my water bill every month. It's like, you just, in order to like survive and sustain life, this is just the check you have to write.
That's
it's like
do.
Dealing with your spouse and like the back and forth in conversations or arguments. You're like, I've had to like learn what humility is, not always perfectly, but like I have to like learn how to engage and listen. And that can feel when you're like single and 24, like how would I ever do that for 50 years before you get married? You're like, oh, but this, like, this is just what you do to be, this is what it means to be in a relationship. Like, you have to say, I'm sorry. You have to own what you've done. You have to learn how to listen and re-listen, all that. Same with cleaning up throw up. It's like, I never thought, college me would have had no idea that like, you're going to be cleaning up throw up and it's not even, you're not even really going to be thinking about it. You're just going to be like, this is what I have to do.
Dave,
yours was so Bobby McFerrin.
That was really
good.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm really proud of that. Do you hear that? Not that, but do you hear that? The other that?
Oh, that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I left my espresso machine on. Yeah.
No.
I tell you, I could fall asleep to that sound every night.
Well, listen, then boy, John, do I have a podcast for you.
Oh, go
on. The 12-Hour Sound Machine Podcast is exactly that. Ooh. You can get sound machines that help you slow your thoughts and reduce anxiety, great for stressed out parents, and sound machines that help you escape a busy and distracted world, great for, well, everyone.
It was created by a dad who couldn't find any sounds that would play long enough to last through a whole night of his baby sleeping. And we're completely free of interruptions, loops, or fading in and out.
The most popular sound machines are white noise, pink noise, and brown noise. Which one do you think would be best if you had to choose for you, John?
See, I'm more of a plaid noise guy.
Oh.
My high school was the Highland Scots.
I get that.
Right?
Uh-huh.
But maybe I could set up several speakers and play different sound machines at once. Mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I see they also have air dryer,
ooh,
box fan, air conditioner, and vacuum sound machines. Genius.
All of those were nicknames for me when I was playing the drums. They're like fidget toys for your ears, John. Something passive, something constant, something calming and familiar. All of that helps when focusing, calming down, studying, etc.
That's true. And I cannot wait to check it out at 12hoursoundmachines.com or search wherever you get your podcasts.
That's the number 12hoursoundmachines.com. And get some rest already.
Well, I always think about like when you're at the beginning of a relationship, like when you're like dating, you know what I mean? Like it's all. This is the best way that I could explain it to somebody who doesn't have kids, who hears the story that you're just telling. Which is, it's not like you're not exhausted and all the things while it's happening. But like think of the things that you would do when you are just at the beginning of your, like my relationship with Amy. Like there was this one time when I had been up all night one night, driving back with the band from someplace, and I get back to Indiana. And I immediately got in the car and I drove through the night to Pittsburgh.
Just to see her.
Just to see Amy.
Yeah.
Like,
I love it.
Now, if you were like, hey, do you want to stay up all night tonight and then stay up all night tomorrow night? I would be like, there is not an amount of money you could pay me to do that. But at the time, I was like, this is just what I'm going to do because I want to be with Amy. It's like,
a great way to, yeah.
But there's also the, like, to sustain that, it's like you have to really just always keep your expectations in check. When it comes to bedtime, which is the hardest part of the day,
it's gonna be a thing.
I have to just say, like, for the next 2 hours, or not even the next 2 hours, just indefinitely, I'm gonna be a dad.
Yep.
I can't think like, no, Amy and I are gonna hang tonight and I'm gonna make, you know, no other expectations.
Yeah, 100%.
If I keep that expectation of being a dad, then I've got a shot.
It's true. It's really true. And like But I'm, and because of love, you're like willing to write the check. It's right. Like, this, I want to do this. I'm willing to do this.
And I can't say this enough. Again, this podcast is called Dadville. The amount of joy, and oh, here we man. Go cheesy, but it's true.
Yeah.
And satisfaction and purpose I get from that.
Yes.
I remember before we had kids, and again, I'm not saying everybody has to have kids at all. This podcast is called Dadville, so we have a lean here.
Yeah.
Right. If you want to be a guest.
There's a tell. But like, I remember me, just me personally, the way I am made, I remember this so well, sitting with Annie one night, and you know, we were watching a show, probably Downton Abbey back in the day. And I remember turning to her and saying, I love this, and I'm so thankful we can sit and do this. I can't do this the rest of my life.
Right.
There's got to be something more, you know? And for us, a lot of that is kids. Mm. It does, like, it's not a, you're scrubbing the floor. Right. There is something that I sleep better having done, having provided for my kids, having served my kids during the day. It gives me so much sense of purpose and satisfaction.
Sacrificial love for someone who is totally dependent on you is really satisfying.
Yeah.
Even though it's sacrificial. So it takes something out of you, but it's like, I am poured out, but I am not wiped out.
That's right. Look at you.
You know,
look at you trying to be a podcast.
Hey, I did want to ask though, like earlier when I was saying everything that I was just saying about expectations, all this stuff, are you in the back of your mind thinking like, you got two kids. What do you even know? I always think for people who have...
Cut to you and Britta talking later.
Yeah.
As you're making peanut butter sandwich. Your ninth peanut butter sandwich. So, John. No, this is what he said. I just want to listen to this exact quote.
I do think, honestly, like there's lots of people at Midtown who just have one. I think that about people with one. Like the first, you think like, oh, this is the hardest I've ever...
Right.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, you don't know anything.
You guys have two parents for every one kid.
But I'll also say, I don't think it nearly as much about people that have made it through like the toddler phase, which you're on the other side of that two times over. Yep. That phase of like, you know, I'm dealing with a terrorist.
Yeah.
Like this is anyone who's survived that with one or two, I'm like, oh, you get it. Like this is, you know, it's like that world is, I don't feel any kind of like superiority. I feel it with you in some other ways, but not about the number of children.
So I've got one more question before we do our last one. I can't speak for John, but
I've got another one too. Go ahead.
One thing I do want to ask about with you again, and you may have already addressed this, so don't feel like you have to rehash this, but what are the things that you think are especially tricky or you fear about your profession and your kids?
I've actually talked with John and Amy about this when we've been on some double dates, and she's been really good about speaking into this as a pastor's
kid. Oh, you're right. Amy.
Yeah. There is like a, hey, because of my sin, the ways that I will have already and will continue to sin against you, but also because I represent, not just as your dad, but as the pastor of the church, like how you might view Jesus or how you will view Jesus, I don't want you to write Jesus off because of your dad's failings.
Wow.
And don't hold it against Jesus that your dad didn't love you the way, didn't provide for you the way, didn't show up for the way, you know. And I don't think I'm like cosmically failing at that, but I know I am failing at that. And so there is like this, you're going to have it intertwined to believe, man, maybe Jesus isn't who everybody says he is, because my dad talked about Jesus a lot and he wasn't, you know, he didn't love me the way that I needed to be loved. And again, no one's saying that. That's Kurt Thompson, y'all's other guest who I love. Like, that's shame talking. That's even future shame talking. It hasn't even happened yet, but I'm fearful of that. Read something the other day that was talking about how often do we reprimand our kids? How often do we like correct our kids for things that they're doing that are merely just mirrors of things that we've shown them.
Forget about
like,
it.
You know, it's like,
forget about
I'm disciplining you because you're doing exactly what I've shown you to do.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And it's
like doubly, the angst is
yeah,
two
it's
times
like, I'm going to crush this in you to hopefully crush it in me because I hated me. Totally.
Yeah.
So that kind and that being intertwined with how they may grow up and view the church or view Jesus is like, man, please don't. So one of the things I've said before is like, all five of my kids may not grow up to love Jesus. I hope you just don't like, don't write Jesus off because of me.
Yeah.
And I know that may be even like, that may be too much to ask. Like that, they will not be able to separate. And that's part of it. Again, no one's doing that right now. My kids love Jesus to the degree that they can. They love going to church. Like, it's good. There's so many stories.
For sure.
You know, and so it's the stories, not necessarily reality, that's telling me to be afraid of that. But
to encourage you, I think, you know, with my dad, I say this all the time because people ask me, like, were you a crazy preacher's kid? And none of us were. There were three of us.
Right.
And we all are like, we believe in Jesus, all three of us, and are involved in churches, which is even more possibly miraculous, right?
Totally.
Like, very involved.
Not in your local church, but yeah.
Let's define local. I think, because God sees the whole globe. Isn't that interesting? I think the thing that I would encourage you with is that I think what, and I think my siblings would say this too, the thing that Dad did so well is he and Mom both lived just a really, like, functional faith.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in retrospect, because I had friends that were preachers' kids that were that really struggled through some things. But Dad just did this crazy – he and Mom just had this ability. When they came home, they lived it in front of us with no bells and whistles. So it wasn't like, let's hide the whole thing, or let's really double down on, like, making all the big words feels. It was just like, wow, it looks like they're kind of doing this thing that they really believe. And it's just a part of our life, and it's how we make our decisions. So for me, there was never this discrepancy because it was always boots on the ground. It was just kind of like, this is what we do, this is how we live.
Mm-hmm. Man, not to make everything biblical, but that's kind of my job. The Psalm 127, short psalm, but it's captured me in the last couple months since having our fifth. Talks about, unless the Lord builds a house, those who build it labor in vain.
I've thought about that song and so that much lately.
And that is so good. I was thinking about it first, though.
No. I'm older than you are.
But, but he goes on to talk about, you know, it is in vain that you rise up early and go to bed late, eating the bread of anxious toil. Like, and you can kind of start to think, like, he's talking about your vocation or your job or, like, what you do. And then he says at the end of verse 2, he gives to his beloved sleep. The Lord gives to his beloved sleep, to which I go, well, then I guess the Lord must hate me these days. Because, but then... Verses 3-5 is all about being a father. Like, it's all about children. Like, blessed is the man whose like quiver is full of the arrows of his children all that kind of stuff. And the fruit of the womb is a blessing. Like, it's all about, the first two verses about unless the Lord builds a house and those who build it labor in vain, or like it is in vain that you rise up early and go to bed late, eating the bread of anxious toil, is all about in relationship to being a parent. Like, how much anxiety you can have over this call and this vocation to be a dad, to be a mom. And then he gets to the very end and he says, essentially a version of, those who know that the Lord is building their house, they sit at the gate with their enemies and they're unafraid.
Hmm.
And like, so I think about, I'm afraid of the enemy saying the taunt of your kids are going to hate Jesus because of you. And it's like, but if the Lord's building the house, I can sit at the gate and be unafraid because this is like, he's the one. I can go to bed and not lose sleep over this because... This is the Lord's house,
right,
not mine.
Right.
Yeah. So
that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
Okay. I've got just one last question before we do our last two. And I think about this with pastors especially, but anybody who's sort of in that Christian world. Do you feel like me personally with my faith, I've got way more questions than I have answers.
And I love that about you.
And I have the freedom to have all those questions.
Right.
I mean, for lack of a better way of explaining this, but like I have ways where I can pick things up and be like, well, what about this? And what about this? And what about this? And I don't know how that is for you. I see you and I'm like, I don't know if Elliot has that freedom. For me personally, you have that freedom me.
Yeah.
But I could imagine that you don't feel like you have that freedom to sort of wrestle with everything publicly or privately or whatever. Like, do you feel like you have to kind of keep all that in check or behind the curtain?
Off the top of my head, I don't feel that way. I think we have a healthy church that, like, I'm not expected to or demanded to have all the answers and maybe live with all the certainty that people want to believe is there. There are some things I believe to be true and I'm certain about scripturally, but this idea that, like, everything is up in the air... I have to be certain about these things and I can't question anything. I don't feel that pressure publicly or privately. I think that hopefully is what some people are drawn to about our church. And I hope how I will even like raise my kids is in the knowledge of this mysterious thing we call faith and this mysterious thing called the Trinity and this like crazy idea of the incarnation and the resurrection. Like, I don't understand all these things, but just because I can't understand them all doesn't mean I can't know them. Hmm. And I think that there's like a, that like mystery of faith in that, like, scripture is clear about these things. That doesn't mean I understand them. That also doesn't mean I don't have a ton of questions. But I'm okay in that tension. I don't feel, I think if you had asked me like in high school, if, oh, you're going to be a pastor one day, you're going to need to have all these answers about all these things, I would have felt that hypothetical pressure. I don't feel it right now. And I think that people at our church, if they demand those things, they don't stay very long. You know, like we're not that kind of place necessarily, but no, I haven't felt that.
Good.
Isn't it funny what that infers? Like, I listen to you talking, I'm like, if we believe at all that there's a God, surely we can't know everything. He does. Like, I mean, just at a base level, we're really assuming that as things he's created, we're going to be like, no, we need to know everything.
That's,
you're already, and I struggle with that. I'm not saying that as someone whose hands aren't dirty with that, but sometimes a little lucidity, I go, oh yeah, why in the world do I think I need to know everything? Like, but what is faith?
That we feel in certain rooms, like we can feel certain things, we can say certain things in a small, in our small group, or at lunch with a certain person, that we can't, if we heard those same ideas on Sunday morning, it rubs people the wrong way. I realize we're being abstract right now, but
I think
that
right.
general sense of that sort of,
well, I think even in like the mysterious relationship between like faith and certainty and those things, it's almost like what people really want to know is like, that guy maybe doesn't have certainty about all the answers, but he's not afraid. Yeah. Like, he's okay because the things he is certain about, like those things, you know, it's kind of what you're saying, like God, the maker, why would I think the finite would have infinite knowledge of anything? But I know there is an infinite one and he does. So I'm okay. Like, I don't have to know it all.
That's right.
What, who was it? It wasn't Descartes, but some
Dave Barnes.
It was Dave Barnes.
That's the Hebrew pronunciation.
Dave Barnes.
Some philosopher around the time of the Enlightenment basically said, and I'm going to botch it, I'm sure, but like, faith has reasons which reason knows nothing of. Like, it doesn't have to be all like logically concluded that I fully understand this now, but the heart has reasons which reason knows nothing of. Like, I don't have to be able to explain all this. I just, by faith, I can know that these things are true. Actually, that's what Hebrews 11 talks about a lot, which this little word in Hebrews 11 over and over is, by faith we understand. And it's like, wait, faith and understanding, those two things go together. By faith we understand this, by faith we understand this, that like, I may not get to a logical understanding of all this, but by faith that I can understand the mystery of it.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm preaching
that's
now, sorry.
Yeah, that's what we pay to do. I don't. Yeah. John does.
Do you tithe? I don't know.
Yearly.
Every couple of years.
It's going to come in out. Okay, so we always end Advil with two questions.
Yes.
I'll ask you the first one.
Okay.
What is the one thing you want your kids to know?
Oh, man. Man, I knew you were going to ask a question like this, and it still chokes me up, man. Poof. We can edit out the thoughtful silence, can't we?
Yeah, that's what makes it
or
good.
We can extend it.
Or we can double it.
We can do whatever we want.
About a 3-hour interview?
Yeah. I want to, I mean, the first thing is that I love them very much, but that's actually maybe not the biggest thing. I think I want them to know that there's a king and a kingdom that they belong to that is unshakable. Like, they, you're a part of a story that's so much bigger than this little life. And in that kingdom, there is so much dignity and so much value and so much meaning and so much beauty. They're like, I hope you know your dad loves you. I hope you know the king loves you even more. Man, I wish I would have thought about how to say that in a like concise way, because there is, it's almost like, hey, I want you to know you belong in this family, but like, you're gonna, I almost want to like set you up to go like explore and create beauty in the world. And you're not going to be able to like leave this launch pad unless like, you know, there's like something bigger than just your family loves you.
That's a great way.
You know?
Yeah. Love that.
So,
okay. Last question. What do you want Esther, Winton, Tilly, Oakland, and Joni to say at your funeral?
Man, thank you for knowing all the names.
I can't believe those are like, I know like 28 names and those five of them are your kids.
It's got taken.
Say at my funeral. Tilly, my 4-year-old, the other night going to bed said, Dad, I had a dream that you die soon. And I was like, Tilly, what I said, it was kind of sweet because I said, well, were you sad? And she goes, well, no, I knew I'd see you again.
Oh,
which was amazing.
Interesting, though, that the dream wasn't that you died.
Yeah, died
it
soon.
It was that you will die soon.
You will die soon, yeah. And I was like, weren't you a little sad? Like, there's a little, could you be a little
She's
sad?
She's like, real talk, me and Mom have talked about this, and we love your energy. It's just a lot of space, and we could use a little more space.
I think,
I'm thinking foosball table. So,
do you have a will, Dad? What? Can you up it soon? Because it's not right. Oof.
Side note about Tilly. Do we have 3 minutes for you to tell one?
Yeah.
Tilly is a crazy story about Tilly. You can use the story or not, but it is a deep dad place in me. And I say this in terms of I want to connect it back to what she said, and then I'll answer the funeral question because it does all relate to that. But we my wife had 2 of her 3 miscarriages, and then we got pregnant with Tilly. And then about 8 or 10 weeks into that pregnancy, we were in Chicago for Thanksgiving, and Britta started bleeding profusely. We knew it was going to be a 3rd miscarriage. We go to the ER. You know, I'm sure this is another round. It's not going to happen. So we go in. They take a, like, they're like, hey, the baby's probably dying or is at least dead. Mm-hmm. But Mom isn't stopping her bleeding, so we've got to do something. Like, you're not just going to, we can't just maybe wait for this baby to pass. We've got to actually do something about it. So let's send you back for an ultrasound into the, like, delivery area so we can kind of see where the baby is, because we might have to go, like, get the baby out, like, right now. So we go back and they show us on the ultrasound, they find the baby. I've never seen this on all, I've seen a lot of ultrasounds in my day. Mm-hmm. This baby does a like 360 loop, like a flip in utero. And the ultrasound tech was like, I've never seen that before. Like, this baby's like alive and dancing and happy and jumping up and down. Like, what is this? And I was like, this baby's alive and excited to be alive. Like, what are we talking about? So we roll back to the ER and they're like, hey, we know that you saw a live baby. Mom's bleeding too much. It was so much blood. Mom's bleeding so much. We have to abort the baby tonight.
Like, Holy cow.
Or Mom's going to die. Like, we can't let this baby. So we're like freaking out. Britta's like, I don't want to die tonight, but I don't, like, we can't abort the baby. Like, what are we, you know, it was awful. They call an OB. It's like midnight or 2 a.m. at this point. They call an OB on call who happens to be coming to the hospital for delivery. She delivers a baby and then comes down and sees us. I'm like, all right, look, we know you're bleeding a lot, Mom. Baby may or may not make it, but like, why don't you go home, get out of a high stress ER room, go get in bed. If you stop bleeding by the morning, we might be okay. But if you're still bleeding in the morning, we're gonna have some really hard decisions to make. So we go home, Britta stops bleeding, but she's gotta be on bed rest for the next, you know, 6 months. And we have sweet Tilly. And there's a whole reason where Tilly gets her name. Her name's Talitha, which comes from the story of the bleeding woman in Mark chapter 5. That Jairus' daughter was dying. Jesus gets interrupted by a bleeding woman. He finally makes it to Jairus' house. The daughter's dead. And Jesus says, no, she's not dead. She's sleeping. Everyone thought this baby was dead, but he says, Talitha Kumi, little girl, wake up. So Talitha is her name. Anyway, that's Tilly's story. It's beautiful. A year and a half ago, we're reading Jesus' storybook Bible to Tilly. And it's like, we get to a page with Jesus on it. And that's Jesus. And she goes, Daddy, Mommy, that's not what Jesus looks like. We're like, she's like, I've met Jesus. I know Jesus. I'm like, oh, that's sweet. Like, Jesus lives in your heart. And she goes, no, I've met him. We're like, well, tell us about it. Tell us that story. Like, just trying to, like, let her use, like, her imagination. She says, well, I was walking on a beach with Jesus, and he was holding my hand, and Mommy was screaming for me to come back, saying to Jesus, don't take my baby, don't take my baby, don't take my baby. And so Jesus then turned me around and walked me back to Mommy and handed me to Mommy. And then Mommy sang me lullabies and I fell asleep. And it was like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Hold on.
I was like, have you met Jesus? Like, I think you've made, like, I think you know Jesus. Like, I think you, and you know, who knows? That's some of the mystery of, like, what are we talking about? I say all that to say, when Tilly talks about deeply spiritual things, I listen because I'm like, maybe. So when she says, Dad, you're going to die soon, I'm like,
I did not know that story.
Yeah, it's a crazy story. So
were you like, okay, was it the beach of Lake Michigan? Like,
yeah.
Tell Chicago. Me more about the beach. But
so this actually let me know, maybe she's not lying. I said, okay, Tilly, tell me about Jesus. What was he like? And she said, I kid you not, Dad, he is so funny. And I was like, maybe, like.
I'm in.
It was like, I think you, I don't know. Who knows? You know, mystery, who knows? But when she then says, hey, Dad, I had a dream that you die soon. I'm like, I don't.
Like,
maybe, like, of all my kids, maybe he actually told you, like. So thinking about my funeral, they, Enneagram 7, like Dave, they will say, they will have in them a knowledge and experience of dad is fun, dad is funny, dad brings the joy, dad brings the party, we go do fun adventures with dad. That will be a norm. And I would be delighted if they would say that. Like, my dad delighted in me and, like, brought joy. I think what, like, I think I want them to say, with all the fun, dad dwelled with me. Like, dad sat with me. Dad saw me. He wasn't off having so much fun pastoring and preaching so many people, going on so many fun adventures that, like, I always knew I could get my dad's attention. I always knew, like, I had my dad's face. And I really want them to say that in 5 days or in 50 years, whenever that is.
I know. As you're saying that, I'm like, man, I hope my girls say that.
Yeah. So.
Well, I think, too, I can relate to that heavily. I just think there's nothing I'm more scared of as not to beat the Enneagram drum too much, but God, that is a struggle for me.
Yeah.
You know? And I would hope they'd be like, no, like, you did a pretty good job. Be like, oh, my God. Yeah, like, I have no more relief than the hearing that.
You know? You, is it pretty good or really good?
Yeah, I'll take any kind of good. Yeah.
Any good.
That you were willing to slow down for me.
Oh, man.
I had your face, Dad. And, like, thanks for all the fun. And, like, we did the fun parties and the fun adventures. And we laughed so much. But, like, I had my dad's attention.
Come on.
Golly.
Get in there. Love you. Thanks for being on.
Love you. Thank you.